Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Monday, April 17th, 2017. We'll begin with some local news. New York City youth spoke out against the school-to-prison pipeline at City Hall today. They want the city to divest from cops in the schools and instead invest in restorative justice programs, summer youth employment opportunities, unlimited student metro cards year-round, and more guidance counselors in New York City schools.
We are calling out the mayor and the city funding actions and demanding that they defund the criminalization of black and brown youth and start funding programs and resources that young people actually need to succeed.
Jameel Burgess is with the youth advocacy group Future of Tomorrow, which is in East New York.
Hands down, if you look at the amount of money that is spent on school safety personnel, training, metal detectors, cameras, cars, and so much more other expense, it's outstanding when you compare that to the amount of money that's invested in positive programs, restorative practices, job opportunities for young people. There's so much money spent on criminalizing young people versus supporting and uplifting young people, and we have to make a change. We have to divest from criminalizing our black and brown youth and invest in their futures.
And Burgess says cops are no substitute for guidance counselors.
One thing that we could agree on with the cops is that they are not counselors. You know, they're cops. They're not counselors. It's a big difference. That's not in their job description. And so with that being said, they have no right to be counseling in schools or to be taken on those type of roles. Let them do whatever they have to do outside of the school, while small discipline actions that take place in our schools should be handled by school administration and school staff.
There are 5,511 NYPD school safety personnel and only 2,800 full-time guidance counselors. And the disparity between the number of NYPD in public schools and guidance counselors makes students wary. There are 5,511 NYPD school safety personnel and only 2,800 full-time guidance counselors and 1,252 full-time social workers. That's for the city's 1.1 million students.
Before we even get to a classroom every morning, we are greeted by police officers and metal detectors. We are treated like delinquents before we are considered academics and humans.
Donovan Tavares is with the Urban Youth Collaborative and Make the Road.
Martin Luther King Jr. once referred to budgets as moral documents. We need a new moral document in New York City, one that divests from systems that harm us and invests in ensuring we all have the supports, resources, and access to opportunities we need to thrive.
The Center for Popular Democracy released a report today which outlines the costly process of criminalizing New York City students.
Right now, the Department of Education invests $6 million for restorative justice compared to $400 million on the school-to-prison pipeline. Over 1,800 schools and 1.1 million students, that's only $6 per student for restorative justice, but $400 per student for the school-to-prison pipeline.
Stephanie is also with the Urban Youth Collaborative and Make the Road New York.
A district the size of New York City needs to invest $66 million to expand restorative justice citywide. Students that participate in restorative justice workshops or in schools or in circles strengthen skills like social communication, and these have positive long-term effects. A student going to court because of a summons has negative, short, and long-term impacts on that student and our community. A student who attends court during a school day is four times more likely to drop out of school. Students who drop out of so many barriers in their way to achieve their dreams. My dream is to graduate high school, go to college, and become an organizer.
At City Hall today, New York City Council member Carlos Menchaca addresses the wide range of students standing on the steps of City Hall.
Buenos dias. My name is Carlos Menchaca, and I represent an incredible community of Sunset Park and Red Hook, Brooklyn. Let's hear it for Brooklyn. Awesome. My name is Carlos Menchaca, and I'm with you. I'm here not just as a New Yorker and a Brooklynite, but I'm here as someone who is not too far away from my time, was once a youth. We cannot forget about our youth. You are the youth. You are the future. So I'm with you with Make the Road. I'm with you with Urban Youth Collaborative. I'm with you all high school students that are raising their voice today and making their pledge today and their agenda clear. My name is Carlos, and I'm also a council member, which means that I have a role and responsibility in this year's budget, which means that you have to hold us accountable, which means that we have to hold the system accountable. And the work that you've done thus far, with this report, is going to actually illuminate the bigger problems in front of us. This budget has to respond to the youth, and they're making themselves heard. They want less police, no police in our schools, and they want more counselors. They want more support. As Stephanie talked about her dream, wanting to be an organizer, I have the news for you. You already are an organizer, like all of you here today. But you deserve that college education, and you deserve that path to what you want, your dreams. And that means all our youth have to do that. And there are so many barriers in front of us right now that get in our way. And this is one. The criminalization of our youth in our schools has to end, and it has to end now. The work that we do is not just for our youth as a youth collective. We have to think about our immigrant youth as well, our LGBT youth as well, people who are gender nonconforming in our schools. These are the people we are lifting today. And as a council member, I'm with you. So if you can help me, we want to make sure that our voices are heard. Let's send a little message and do a little mic check. Mic check.
Mic check.
Mic check.
Mic check.
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Mayor.
New York City Council.
New York City Council.
The City of New York.
The City of New York.
We are the youth.
We are the youth.
We are the future.
We are the future.
Say no to cops.
Say no to cops.
And yes to counselors.
And yes to counselors.
End the summons in our schools now.
End the summons in our schools.
Invest in youth of color.
Invest in youth of color.
Invest in our immigrant youth.
Invest in our immigrant youth.
Invest in our LGBT youth.
Invest in our LGBT youth.
Listen to our voices.
Listen to our voices.
We will be heard.
We will be heard.
Thank you.
For more on supportive schools in New York City and how they are safer than punitive schools, go to populardemocracy.org. Continuing with public schools, all five borough presidents today partnered on a letter to Bill de Blasio calling for full funding of universal free healthy school lunches for every New York City student, this in the 2018 budget. New York City lags behind a number of U.S. cities. They offer universal free lunch. Massachusetts, Chicago, Dallas, Detroit, Philadelphia, and in New York State, free school lunches offered in Buffalo, Hempstead, Poughkeepsie, Rochester, and Syracuse, but not in New York City. Here's Manhattan Borough President Gail Brewer.
As we know, young people who have lunch in the public schools, you can get a title, if you're Title I eligible, then you get a free lunch. If you're not Title I and eligible, meaning low income, then you have to pay. Not a lot, but you have to pay. The problem, there's two problems. One is there is a them and us situation where young people who get Title I feel like second-class citizens. And that can't happen. And one way, we should not have that in our schools. So we, as the five borough presidents, would like to see all lunches be available to all young people for free.
And only about 35% of the New York City school students are getting free lunch, and you want to see it across all of the boroughs.
Right, because stigmas, we're talking today about stigmas. Stigmas are a really bad thing. Bullying is a really bad thing. And we need to have every possible tool used to get rid of stigmas and bullying and people who feel that they're not equal to their peers.
It's not just that, though. Some of the students can't even afford the small amount that's required.
Well, I could also add that the DOE doesn't always collect what they're supposed to collect. That's another story. But the issue is universal lunches would solve many problems in the public schools and would not cost a lot.
Manhattan Borough President Gail Brewer at City Hall today. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. In other New York news, the Manhattan and Brooklyn district attorneys have been conducting Begin Again opportunities. That's where New Yorkers can wipe the slate clean and clear up summonses and warrants, which can snowball into arrests. These can reduce chances of getting work and access to public housing. If you don't pay a fine, a summons can end up with a warrant for an arrest. This weekend, as Sarah Gibson tells us, the Brooklyn district attorney Eric Gonzalez helped New Yorkers to clear up those warrants with Begin Again.
It's crowded this morning at Mount Pisgah Baptist Church in Bed-Stuy. There's a smell of incense and a flurry of parishioners organizing lines outside the sanctuary. But the crowds aren't here for Good Friday. They're here to meet with a judge.
Everybody has a letter in their hand. The ones that don't can't stand on this line. It's around the corner, okay? Thank you.
This letter she's talking about is from the Brooklyn District Attorney to people with outstanding warrants for low-level offenses. Jason Hodge is 21 and lives in East New York. He got his letter in the mail a week ago.
So this letter says, basically, dear neighbor, on April 14th and 15th, Mount Pisgah Baptist Church.
The DA sent 2,500 letters out to New Yorkers like Hodge, inviting them to this church where a judge will clear their records of tickets for violations like
marijuana, riding a bicycle on the sidewalk, littering, loitering, disorderly conduct, being in the park after closing, which is mine.
That's right, being in a park after closing. It was a few days before Christmas, and Hodge was on a date with his girlfriend.
It was like around 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm ready to get her home, safe in the house.
Hodge says he didn't see any signs forbidding them from entering a park after dark.
So we cut through the park, and like as soon as we reached outside of the park, the cop stopped us and was like, hey, you can't be in the park after hours, you know, so we have to give you a ticket. And I was like, dang, like I just had a good date, now I have a ticket, you know.
The ticket had a date on it, to show up in person at court and pay $15. But Hodge says the cop told them to pay online.
Basically, we tried to pay it online and it wasn't showing up, you know. So over time, like we forgot about it.
Forget about until last week when the letter informed Hodge that because he didn't pay, his ticket had snowballed into a warrant for a criminal arrest. This happens to thousands of people each year. Eric Gonzalez is Brooklyn's district attorney. He's here today, too.
Many people, especially people from poor communities, don't go to court to address them because they don't have the money to pay the fine. And they think it's like another type, like a parking ticket.
A parking ticket where you pay like Hodge that, online or in installments, not at court. At this event called Begin Again, people like Hodge can get their warrants dismissed just by asking. This is Begin Again's third year, and Gonzalez expects to clear about 1,000 warrants this weekend. The Manhattan and Bronx DAs have adopted this, too. Gonzalez says the city is realizing that issuing warrants for low-level offenses hurts community police relations.
But to have the New York City Police Department knock on your door at 5 o'clock in the morning because you were walking your dog off the leash 4 years ago seems to be a waste of taxpayers' dollars and really causes sort of friction between law enforcement and the community.
Back in line, a volunteer motions for Hodge to enter the church.
Okay. Everybody have ID?
Make sure you have the ID.
And sir, Hodge nods yes, he has his ID, and waits for a court officer to call his name. The court officer escorts a group to a hall that's been converted into a courtroom, with a metal detector, flags, legal aid lawyers, and a judge. Hodge asks a lawyer if this will happen next month, too, when his girlfriend, who also got a ticket, gets back from college. The lawyer shakes his head. Begin Again is just once a year. Hodge goes up to face the judge, and a minute later, turns around, beaming.
So how did that go?
Dismissed. It's over with.
When he gets home, Hodge is going to call his girlfriend and tell her the good news, for him at least. She still has to go to a courthouse to clear her record. Sarah Gibson, Columbia Radio News.
In other local news, don't turn Albany into Oilbany was the theme of a letter sent to New York Governor Cuomo. More than 3,000 New Yorkers signed the letter asking him to reject two projects that could turn the state capital into a global focal point of transshipped crude oil. Andrea Sears reports.
Thousands of New Yorkers are asking Governor Andrew Cuomo to reject two projects that would increase the flow of crude oil through Albany. A letter signed by more than 3,500 New Yorkers asks the governor to deny permits for construction of an oil facility at the Port of Albany and the Pilgrim Pipeline. Connor Bambrick with Environmental Advocates of New York says building that fossil fuel infrastructure would make the state capital a global focal point of transshipped crude oil, turning Albany into Oilbany.
It
is exactly the opposite type of activity that the governor would need to endorse and embrace in order to meet the very aggressive but necessary goal that he has laid out for the state.
Governor Cuomo's clean energy plans include getting 50% of power for the state from renewable sources by 2030 and ending the use of fossil fuels entirely by 2050. Pipeline proponents say it would be safer than transporting the oil by rail or barge down the Hudson River. The Pilgrim Pipeline would carry highly volatile Bakken crude from Albany to New Jersey. Bambrick points out that Bakken crude is transported to Albany from the Dakotas by rail, using long strings of tanker cars, often called bomb trains.
This would be another enticement to bring the oil trains through here to Albany to load them onto those pipes, threatening potentially thousands of waterways along the proposed path of the pipeline.
Several trains carrying Bakken crude have derailed, causing massive spills and, in some cases, disastrous fires. And Bambrick notes that the proposed oil facility would be used to heat up one of the dirtiest forms of crude oil from Canadian tar sands, which is so thick that when it's cold, it needs to be warmed to be pumped from rail cars to storage or barges.
We saw a spill that occurred years ago in the Kalamazoo River that has cost well over $1 billion now to try and clean up, and they're not even close to getting the job done.
Bambrick adds that with efforts to slow climate change under attack in Washington, the governor's leadership toward a clean energy future is more important than ever. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
Get up! Get down! We pay our taxes in this town! Get up! Get down! We pay our taxes in this town! Get up! Get down! We pay our taxes in this town!
That was the message this weekend at a rally and march in Manhattan, one of many throughout the country on Tax Day. Protesters came out to hold Donald Trump accountable and pressure him to reveal his taxes. They railed against Trump, saying he's turning the U.S. government into a plutocracy, which serves his interests with cuts for services, while 56% of the government's discretionary budget goes to the military. Dominique Jack was out at the rally in Manhattan, and she sends us these voices.
My name is Stephanie Melendez, and I am an accountant for David Yurman. I'm here because we really do need to know what is going on, where are these actual allegations coming from, who he owes money to.
My name is Justin Hendricks, and I work in media. I'm here to protest Donald Trump and his attempts to turn America into a kleptocracy that serves his interests.
Abby Bennett, and I'm a teacher. He's probably breaking a bunch of laws that we don't even know about, and we need to show him that he's our president and that he's responsible to the American people.
My name is Asher, and I work a front desk receptionist at a barbershop. I'm here to march to show support for Donald Trump to release his tax returns. I think it's very important for him. Every other president's done it, even people, past presidents have done it when they're not in office to show where their alliances lie, and he has not done that.
My name is Joshua McLaughlin, and I'm a paralegal here in New York City. I'm not, at this point, what we've seen is there's no one on, the Republican side of the aisle who's willing to hold this president accountable, hold his feet to the fire, so to speak. So to be honest, I'm not naive, and I'm not that hopeful that anything of substance will come out of it. But what we've seen is that public pressure is the driving force to hold everyone in D.C. accountable. And so this is just to let them know that we're still out here, and we know that there's shady stuff going on, and we've got our eye on them, basically.
It's not just about one senator. We have to get them all out there. And it's not just the Democrats, because it's not just us. We need to go into the Republicans, unseat them, make sure that they do not come back in numbers. We got to do something.
You know, I hope that he hears the message, and I hope that his administration hears the message. There are a bunch of Americans who care about what's in his tax returns, and there are a bunch of Americans who aren't pleased with the way that he's behaved.
My name is Belkis Jacobs, and I'm a registered nurse. I think that the Congress has a responsibility, you know, to make him, if he doesn't do it voluntarily, to make him show what is he hiding.
We need our elected representatives to really speak up on behalf of the people, because they're also accountable to us as well. So if they don't join us in our crusade to get them to release his taxes, then we're going to have to vote them out too.
Donald Trump, trying to downplay rallies on tax day across the country, tweeted, "Someone should look into who paid for the small organized rallies yesterday. The election is over!" Exclamation point. "You cannot be serious," tweeted William Legate. "There were tons of rallies, and they were massive, bigger than your tiny inauguration." And you're listening to the news here on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York. Turning to the global refugee situation, Anwar Khan is the CEO of Islamic Relief USA. He says in times of stress, people cling to their faith more than a child does to their blanket. He spoke with the UN's Lucy Dean about the unique role faith-based organizations play in assisting refugees.
One, we show the mercy and the compassion of Islam. What you hear from others are fighting, fighting, fighting. And there is in Islam a concept of military. But if you take out all the love, all the compassion, all the mercy and the forgiveness, you don't have that faith anymore. So we are an example that we believe of the real faith. Our name is Islamic Relief, and we believe that we practice these Islamic values. Now, when young men come, and all they see are the men with guns talking about Islam, and they don't see men and women of love and compassion, they're going to model their behavior on the people who are talking about only violence. So we want to practice model behavior. Second thing is, we want to work with them and understand their faith. And what we are doing is trying to address some of their concerns and showing that, look, these Christian guys aren't trying to convert you in the work that we're doing. These secular guys aren't trying to get you on some kind of agenda that you think is against you.
So it's bringing the message to the people. It's like getting advice from a friend. It's easier to take than getting advice from a stranger.
That's really important. And it's a lot of good that these international organizations are doing. So we are showing that we are an example of how you can work with international aid agencies to make the world a better place. And we're changing the narrative, because they think that the only people that like them are those that are radical. Many of them have been brainwashed in their understanding. They don't understand the true Islam. And with us, they see us practicing the true Islam.
What are the advantages of having a strong faith in times of trouble, or what protection can it give? Like, the title of this event mentions home. Is that something that faith can bring refugees who have often lost everything?
That's one of the biggest advantages of faith-based organizations. You see, I can give you food, I can give you medicine, but often what refugees really want is hope, love. And people of faith, again, have their advantages and their disadvantages, but one of the advantages is that we can console people and give emotional counseling. And Islamic Relief USA, we've been doing that here in America. We also sent some of our volunteers here to Lesbos, Greece, to help the Syrian refugees that came. And we had a former Iraqi refugee, a former Afghan refugee. These are women in their 40s and their 50s. And the most important thing they did with the other refugees is give them hugs. Give them hugs, give them a smile, give them hope. They lost everything. They came to this great country, and they not only were able to flourish in this country, but they wanted to pay it forward and go back and help other refugees. Hope, hope, hope is the most important. People cling to their faith more than children cling to their blankets when they are in times of stress. It's extremely important, and sometimes it's the difference between life and death.
Is there anything you think is really important to note?
I wanted to mention the importance of different faith-based organizations working together from different faiths. This is where we really change the narrative of the extremists on both sides. The way that we combat against extremism done by or against Muslims, because we're also the victims. Most of the victims of Daesh that you mentioned are actually Muslims. We don't hear about that much because the Eiffel Tower lights up normally when people in Christian countries get killed, but not with the majority. So I'd just like to remind everyone, people of faith can be the solution when they work together. We can go to some places where our Christian and secular friends cannot go. In the same way, they can go to some places where we can't go. So what we want to do is we want to leverage our cultural sensitivity, our understanding of the faith, and leverage that with our friends of other faith or no faith, so we can work together to help everybody.
Anwar Khan with Islamic Relief USA. He spoke with the UN's Lucy Dean. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Monday, April 17th, 2017. The news was produced with Sarah Gibson, Andrea Sears, Dominic Jack, Lucy Dean, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.